This podcast is sponsored by Hercules Strong Guard Tires. Visit HerculesTiresCommercial.com to learn more.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Tuesday, during the pre-show meeting, we just established that we don't care.
We'll get to that here in just a little bit. We got a great show ahead. The SCOTUS ruling on NCAA compensation yesterday. That was really interesting. Tell you about the GOP representative that says every state is a border state. Yeah. Why? You're affected by it.
Yeah.
A Democratic senator who rails against systemic racism belongs to an all-white club. And the left seems to be extremely quiet about that. We'll have what his response was. The Obama ethics chief, this is during the Obama administration, going after Biden and Hunter again. Wow. Not letting up. Polls show very strong support for voter ID. As the Washington Post gets smacked for calling Democrats who flip-flopped on voter ID evolving, that it's an evolution.
Uh-huh.
And that was picked up on very quickly, saying, I wonder if Republicans flip-flopped on a major issue in one day.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
we'll give them the weekend. It was a weekend where you had...
Yeah, okay. That's true.
In a 48-hour period, after something that they had pounded on for years as absolutely the evidence of the worst racism in the history of the entire planet isn't big enough, solar system, universe.
Yes. We took calls on it, remember? People trying to explain why it was racist to us. Years ago.
Yes, years ago.
On voter ID.
Oh, absolutely. And now, magically... In a matter of 48 hours,
they evolved.
It is no longer racist.
They evolved.
Well, I think they
grappled. Remember, now, yesterday on the show, I said, instead of just flat out lying, when Warnock said he doesn't even know anyone who objected to it, I said, at least say something like, well, we were grappling and we changed our minds or something stupid. And I guess they were listening. They evolved. Congratulations on evolving. We don't buy it.
No, not for one
second. It's a load of malarkey, but okay, whatever.
Yeah, what they saw was, I think the one poll yesterday showed 80% of Americans favor voter ID. The interesting thing is now we've talked about this before, especially, you know, last year during the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And normally during any Republican campaign, we'll get tons of calls. People saying, you can't get the message out there because of the media. You can't get the message out there because of the media. You can't get the message out there because of the media. And we've said, look, we understand that if you are in the pop culture of media today, if you're paying attention, if you're on social media, depending on who you're, you know, friends with on Facebook or, you know, whatever, you know, you're on, you may look at it and say, well, in my world, everything seems to be liberal. But the fact is, when we were young, when I was young, we only had three TV stations and the local newspaper, and they were all liberal. The internet has changed everything. Mm-hmm. And so we have taken, you know, people that have called, we have said, no, that's not the reality out there. People don't wait for news anymore. They get it on their own.
Right.
Who waits for news?
Yeah,
you know who does? Because it's part of his culture. I'm not criticizing my father for this, but my father waits for the news.
He still likes reading the hard copy of the newspaper, right?
Yes. Yes, he does.
Yeah.
And so, okay, the news is coming up in an hour. And I just smile every time he says it. I just saw him this last weekend And I just smile. It's like, well, he's going to wait for an hour to watch the news. That it's like, you know, boom. Now, not that he's not on the internet, mm-hmm. but with him, he's just, my dad's obsessed with YouTube. It's not even the news items he looks at.
Mm-hmm.
He just goes to YouTube and find interesting things.
Yeah, right.
Wow, did you see this helicopter can do this? And I mean, his engineering mind focuses, all right, what are the new engineering things out there?
Right.
But for news, he still waits.
Yeah.
And I always chuckle because I'm like, okay, that may be the last generation that waits for news.
Yeah.
Because I'm the generation after, and I grew up waiting for news. I don't wait for news.
Right.
And all of my friends that are around my age, nobody waits for news. And so
my mom said the other day she still gets a magazine subscription. I said, which one? She said, Easy Rider. So she still waits for news on bikes and tattoos.
Well, at least it wasn't High Times.
Yeah, right.
Do they still exist?
I don't know. I guess they do online.
I remember in college, hey, you get the latest edition of High Times?
Yeah. Yeah. Now, yeah.
No. How does that going to raise or lower the cost of drugs by getting it?
Right.
That goes back to the old Norm on Shears. His question all the time, is this going to raise or lower the cost of beer?
Right. That's the only question.
Right. That's the only question that exists out there.
Right.
When you're in college, is it going to make it so is cost going to go higher to get higher? I don't have the expendable income to buy High Times. I don't know who was really buying High Times at that time.
I actually don't know. You would have to be motivated to get up off the couch back then.
Yeah.
Get in your car. Go down to a store or a newsstand that actually carries it. You're going to have to find one. Not every... I don't even know where you would have found it. I'm not sure that every... It would have to be one of those stores that, you know, that's got, back in the day, one of these huge magazine racks.
Right.
And then purchase it and then take it home.
And at the point when you got there, the competition was, you know, Playboy or High Times.
Right. So you got both. And you went back to the house and you immediately filled out the subscription card for High Times because you never want to get off the couch to have to do that again. By the way,
somebody out there is just going to listen to that segment and say, for the first time, and say, who are these guys? You know, why are they talking like this? You know what magazine I subscribed to in college?
Hmm.
U.S. News and World Report.
You know, early in high school, late middle school, early high school, I think probably through my freshman year, Fangoria magazine, it would do the behind the scenes on horror movies. They would show you how masks and all the makeup for whatever movie it was. An American Werewolf in London was one that always fascinated me because it was, you know, that was cutting edge.
I didn't have a subscription, but as a kid, and I don't know how long, I mean, because somebody always had a copy of it, but Mad Magazine was really big.
Oh, yeah. You would grab it anytime you could, right?
Yeah, even in college you did.
Mm-hmm.
You grabbed Mad Magazine because, you know, and if you look today, because people, I remember when, you know, Mad Magazine stopped the actual subscription magazine and people said, oh, no, this type of comedy is dead. And all of a sudden The Onion came along and the Babylon Bee and they're not doing it in the same form, but it is that same, you know.
Same writing style.
Same writing style. And so it hasn't, I never thought it really could disappear because it was too much of the message that was being communicated, the humor that was being communicated, the slam on politics that was being communicated, and pop culture just could not go away.
Right.
That sort of, should I call it intelligence snarkiness?
Yeah, right.
Is just too great of an entertainment form in a free society not to have.
Political humor is I think, getting better these days. Thanks to Seth Dillon and everyone over at Babylon Bee, and some of The Onion. I say some because not all of it's political humor.
Yeah. Some of it was, I was going through some stuff about a week ago, and I realized, oh, this is all Onion stuff, and it was really good, because the Babylon Bee sort of took over.
Yeah, yeah. No, they're very talented at the Onion, but they'll often do pop culture stuff and everything else. And sometimes Seth Dillon's staff will do that occasionally, but they're really focused on the political stuff. And
yeah,
it's very fun.
And there's stuff that crosses over because of the media's obsession, for example, with the royal family.
Mm-hmm. Bennifer.
Bennifer. Yeah, Bennifer. I mean, you see it. I mean, you go through it and you see the obsession with, you know, from the New York Post on it, from Fox News. And it's just, you know, I don't know if does the Daily Caller still have like they'd have it like articles, and then they'd have the latest bikini shot, as if people that read conservative news sites have to have a bikini shot. Otherwise, you know, this actress in a bikini.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it lately. I haven't gone to a lot lately. I'll just scan to see if it's there. But yeah, the Bennifer thing for some reason, you know, Fox and the New York
Two
Post.
Old people making out.
That's what you said the other day, and it's like, well, you know what it is? It's just, I you know, on so many things, and it's funny, maybe it's because there's so much news out there where I instantly judge something and say, I don't care.
Yeah.
The story on Carl Nassib yesterday, the Oakland Raider coming out as gay, I went, I don't care.
Okay, yeah, I don't care.
I think that's the way we should be in society.
Right.
I just don't care.
Right.
Can he play football? I just don't care. And we've said this before on race. I don't care. Well, you have to care. No, I don't care. That's actually where you want to get to in society, where I don't care what your skin color is.
To me,
I don't.
It's not an issue. I don't know why it needs to be an issue.
Right. I don't care. No, it doesn't matter to me. Now, if you decide to get into the arena of ideas, which is something that you and I've chose to do, then it's a different story.
Yep.
And then it's like, okay, your ideas will be judged. But when I saw the story yesterday, I'm like, oh, well, okay, the media's going to make, I think it was even Fox that had bombshell. Was it a bombshell?
Not a bombshell.
It wouldn't make bombshell Friday because we don't care.
Because it's not a bombshell.
It's not a bombshell.
Well, and it's been, I don't know how many years anyone associated with the NFL has said, yeah, there are many gay players. They just haven't come out.
Right.
Well, you see more of that in the future? I don't know. And I didn't care when somebody said that. It doesn't matter. That's fine. It doesn't affect me one way or the other.
Well, it's like when Howard Schultz came out, remember, for Starbucks, the whole thing, when they were writing on the cups and they came out with
the... Let's talk race.
The entire newspaper article. Mm-hmm. Have you ever, you know, I bet you don't even know what the race of your neighbors are. Have you ever counted and have you ever gone down and understand what the race... No. I never did because I didn't care.
They're my neighbors. I don't care.
My neighbors, I don't care what their color of their skin is.
Right.
I don't care.
I would say as long as my neighbors keep the noise down, I'm fine. But I'm the one with all the noise because I have eight grandkids.
Keep the noise down and treat the fire ant mounds.
Yeah.
That's about all I care about.
Right.
Don't let your dog poop on my lawn. Now that I will judge a neighbor by.
Right.
But I'll never forget, because you and I talked about it. We said, why is he obsessed with who his neighbors is? Neighbors are, what their race, color of skin, gender, sex. Who cares? I don't care.
I'm sure his huge grand estate, his neighbors, that's the equivalent of us driving six city blocks to, you know, get to a stoplight.
Yeah. Well, you know, maybe he's like Senator Whitehouse, you know,
Right.
Screaming for systemic racism, white fragility, white privilege. Oh, so you belong to an all-white club, huh?
Yeah.
Well, you know, so that's how we just do things down here. Oh, okay.
Oh,
nice to
okay.
know that. That's
it's
really
okay.
nice to know that.
So, oh, all right. Okay.
So we got that and a whole bunch more coming up here in the show today. If you want to get in, we'd love to hear from you. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. If you want to get into the show today, just very quickly, because I want to at least get to this. Both the NAACP and Congressional Black Caucus were silent on Monday after news broke that Democratic Senator Sheldon Whitehouse defended his membership to an elite all-white beach club.
Wow.
This from Breitbart. Breitbart News reached out to both the NAACP and Congressional Black Caucus for comment. Neither organization would respond. Whitehouse, who decried, he's, by the way, just so people know, because I've said this before about him, he's a nut. Sheldon Whitehouse, he's just a nut. I mean, I try to follow him connecting the dots on any issue.
Right.
He's just, this guy's just an emotional wreck.
Right.
That when he throws out his politics, he's just, like I said, I've always said that about him. I'm like, wow, this guy's just a nut. And when you're a nut, you don't pay attention to whether you are actually being a hypocrite or not.
Right.
You just don't. But he's decried systemic racism and frequently, over the, the years. And he's frequented the Bailey Beach Club for decades, Go Local Providence first reported. While the 124-year-old club can't legally mandate its members be all white, its lack of diversity was first documented back in 2003 by the New York Times.
Wow. Wow.
White House defended his Bailey Beach Club membership, officially known as the Spouting Rock Beach Association, to a reporter on the eve of Juneteenth National Independence Day.
Mm.
He said, it's a long tradition in Rhode Island.
Belonging to an all-white beach club is a long tradition?
And there are many of them, and I think we just need to work our way through the issues, thank you.
We just need to ignore this controversy about me.
He was asked that, a reporter asked him if a wealthy all-white club like Bailey should still exist in 2021.
It's a tradition? Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You should feel guilty. You should feel bad. But for him, it's just a tradition. Wow. Yeah, the hypocrisy, it gets back to what we have talked about. Set the hypocrisy aside. We talked about in terms of climate change or COVID, they don't believe the science. In this case, we'll talk about the fact that this is how they think when they talk to you about things about racism. This is their mind at work. They're the ones who are racist. Now look at their associations. Tell us we're wrong. Here's your forecast.
The Gulf Coast, Deep South, Carolinas, and on up through the I-95 corridor into the Northeast. We'll see a good amount of rain today. Rainfall amounts from a trace for most of eastern Texas into southern Oklahoma to heavy downpours today for Gulf Coast states from Florida back over to Texas. Now that rain will continue through Georgia and heavy at times through the Carolinas on up the I-95 corridor. We won't see much in the way of rainfall back towards Indiana, but then from Ohio, New York, and on into Maine, a good amount of clouds and rainfall will persist throughout the day. So if it's not raining yet in those areas we mentioned where you are, look for the chance of rain through today. There's a fair bet we could see some severe weather associated with this front. Damaging gusts, sporadic severe hail, and perhaps a tornado remain possible. For the first Tuesday of summer, your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
It's Not Always Pretty. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Good morning. Thanks so much for being here. Well, the Supreme Court yesterday, another 9-0 decision.
Have they just all become buddy-buddy?
Well, as you and I pointed out, there in the past have been a lot of 9-0 decisions. I don't remember this many, though. Well, there was a 7-2 decision last week.
Yeah, there was a 7-2. Yeah. There was another 9-0 last week as well. Yeah. And but, yeah, roughly a third or a little over a third are, since going back to 2000, that's as far back as we went, in terms of the decisions are 9-0. They're not always huge landmark decisions or cases that make big news, but this NCAA thing, I guess everybody's been waiting on to see where it would fall out and what's going to happen. Yeah.
And it's and trying to simplify without getting into all the antitrust mumble jumbo. I mean, because you go through it and be like, okay, I was getting lost in reading it this afternoon. But to try to simplify it, what they're simply saying is, if a member school wishes to offer more educational related benefits that are currently banned by the NCAA, they can do that. That and the NCAA not allowing them to do that, in essence, violates antitrust law. Now, the thing that was really interesting was what Kavanaugh wrote in his concurring opinion, in which he questioned the legality of the remaining restrictions on benefits for college students.
Right.
He made clear this. I'm reading this from SCOTUS blog. He made clear that, and by the way, if you ever want to, what I think is a pretty fair website, I think you probably would agree with me.
SCOTUS blog.
SCOTUS blog is
really great work.
They really do some great work. SCOTUSblog.com, and they go through each and every case, and they do a great job of simplifying it but still giving you the important, I think, the important legal reasons behind it.
Right.
You know,
yes.
Looking at precedent and things like that.
Right.
But as they write here, Kavanaugh joined the court's opinion in full, but he wrote a separate concurring opinion in which he questioned the legality of the remaining restrictions on benefits for college students. He made clear that although those restrictions were not before the court in this case, Monday's ruling established a framework for future challenges to the restrictions. And he wrote, there are some serious questions about whether those rules can pass muster under that framework. And they write here, just as a side note, Kavanaugh, an avid sports fan who coaches his daughter's basketball teams and unsuccessfully tried out for varsity basketball while an undergraduate at Yale, acknowledged that college athletics includes important traditions that have become a fabric of America, but he warned the NCAA is not above the law. Interesting that he wrote that, because you can see the path, I believe, that he is going down.
Right.
And we've spent some time in the past talking about this. And there is no doubt, you cannot make the case that college sports has not become a part of the fabric of America. That is
right.
That is true.
Yeah. Yeah.
His point is, though, it doesn't matter if it breaks the law. And that's what I got out of it. It doesn't matter. There can be a lot of good that an organization does, but if it breaks the law, it doesn't matter.
Right.
And you can look at professional sports today, and you can say that, excuse me, college sports today, and we know how it has become the fabric of so many small to medium-sized cities where there are big universities, right? I mean, that becomes the center of the community. We've talked about sports many times before, and professional sports, and sports in general, but college and professional sports, and how it brings, how it has the ability, not that it always does, but how it has the ability to bring communities together. And to us, that's always been a positive. Now the problem legally with this. Well, let me continue with the benefits. The benefits are that these multi-billion dollar organizations that are bringing in money that wasn't even thought of. A few years back, has helped colleges expand into other sports and giving other opportunities to students where it does not, where those opportunities would not exist.
Right, right.
They just wouldn't exist. The expansion of a number of sports out there. You've had some colleges in the last couple of years, number one, because of attendance, things like that, that are cutting back. They're cutting out sports. So you can look at that and you can say that's the positive of it. When you come to the law, though, which is the negative of it, is it a monopoly for the NCAA to control the marketplace for college athletes?
Right.
To say, we give you a scholarship for your education, room and board.
Right.
And that's it. Everything else.
Only those types of compensation.
Right. Right. Is that, and if a college, member college, wishes to go further on it, well, no, you can't do that. You can't add this and you can't add that and you
right.
can't add this. And that's what was going on, because a lot of the things were sort of related to education, you know, computers, things
yeah, right.
like that, a ton of other things. This ruling was not about monetary compensation
in the
professional ranks. If you do that, you will lose a significant portion of sports where colleges are going right now. You know, you look after COVID and you look at where we are going as a society and the cost of college and people now looking at what the return of investment is. It's going to be tough for colleges to keep increasing the cost. And then if they have to increase the cost and say, okay, to have all these sports programs, we need to increase the cost of tuition. There comes to a point, and I think we've reached that point in a number of university systems out there, where the young person just says, it's not worth it for me to go to college. So it does come down to money. The ultimate thing is, in a free society, even if you're nonprofit, labor laws apply to you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So there's two things to look at. Does labor law apply, or can you have a system? Is it wrong to have a system where you voluntarily state a college education is good enough for me? Will this split up the NCAA? Will you have a number of colleges, or will you just have more minor league sports that exist out there? But minor league sports, when it comes to making a profit, is not going to exist for the vast majority of college sports out there. But in a free society, should the ultimate determination be between the employer or the person that's going to give you some type of compensation for you to be part of a sports organization that is going to make them tons of money? But what about the athlete that is in a sport that is not going to make them tons of money? Should everything in college be market-based? Well, the problem is, even with labor law today, everything isn't market-based.
Right.
Because if it was truly about the individual, labor laws on unions might not be what they are today.
Mm-hmm.
If that's how the law looked at it, that
right.
the individual alone dealing with the employer, nonprofit or not, that you should be able to negotiate. That's part of the discussion on minimum wage. Well, you should be able to negotiate whatever terms you want to negotiate.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem isn't even that. It's the fact that the NCAA has set for all of their member schools that you can only do this. And you have probably some smaller schools say that because of that, we aren't able to get, if we could loosen the rules at our school, we might be able to get somebody who might play for a better school, but like the rules that we have here, or maybe the compensation that we can give here, the educational compensation, would be better. This has the potential long term, I believe long term, and I don't know when it would be, it has the potential, is all I'm saying, of breaking up the NCAA.
Yeah, if what Kavanaugh is alluding to here in his concurring opinion is brought in another case and they go to decide on pay, on cash, on paying students to play, or compensation in general. because, again, you limit the compensation, the type of compensation, and that's something that, of course, is outside the law. And as they write, the NCAA is not above the law. Well, then you get down to it. And could there be a student that says, you know what, I'd rather go play here for this school. I'm going to get a free ride, and I'm going to get some money instead of going over here where it's just the free ride and the fact that it's a certain type of school that's held in high regard, and you want that school on your sheepskin, right?
Mm-hmm.
That again, it really wouldn't matter at that point. The question would only be whether or not they should be able to open up the types of compensation for those players.
And the other point that you can make, especially over the last, you know, probably 20 years especially, and even the last decade, is you have so many players that go to play, especially basketball. And I don't know, basketball is the one that's more, I think, highly reported. The players that come in and play for 1 year or 2 years, they're simply there to be a showcase.
Right.
They're not there to get an education.
Right.
And everybody knows they're not there to get an education.
Yeah.
They're simply there to pad. And when I say pad, I don't mean in a negative way, but just add. I'll say add. I won't say pad because pad sounds like, you know, they're faking something.
Mm-hmm.
But to add to their resume, you know, that, look, I can play pressure basketball.
Right.
And so, okay, here I am. This is a showcase for the NBA,
mm-hmm.
and here I go. And we know there are players that do that, and when they do that, then you can't make the case that this is about, you know, we want you to stay 4 years. The most important thing is your education, and so we wish to, you know, lock you into this, like a – could you do a no-cut contract for a college where you have to stay, otherwise you're in breach of contract?
No, I thought about that.
Yeah.
In other words, that they require you have to stay, you have to graduate.
Right.
And it's all part of the contract, right, and the agreement.
We'll give you compensation, but you got to stay.
Right.
That if you want more, you can't stay a year, then you would have contracts. Because in professional sports, look at any quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Most quarterbacks, Tom Brady the exception, it takes them 5 years.
Right.
And so you invest in something, and you may not get that return in the first year.
Mm.
And so you wish to give them, you say, okay, you need to stay here 4 years, and you need to graduate.
Mm.
Now, how do you do that? I mean, are they in breach of contract if they don't pass?
Right.
If they don't pass their, you know, their classes?
And you bring up something, too. I mean, you know, certain schools, obviously, because they've attracted the in terms of the staff, the coaching staff and the athletic department in general, they've attracted the talent to put together a team that is competitive. That gives some of those students a greater spotlight and showcase ability, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before any scouts in the professional sports leagues. Well, you could get to a point where it's, you know, those schools say, well, we'll give you some cash, but because in this, Kavanaugh doesn't allude to how much. It's just should it be limited, the type of compensation be limited. Again, the NCAA is not above the law here, but schools could compete and say, look, we give you a better showcase, and you got a better chance of coming to this school if you can compete and show off that talent and perform. You've got a better chance of being drafted. You've got a better chance of going pro. So it'll be interesting to watch it play out.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hardy, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. One of the things that I was thinking about is where it says here, Gorsuch also, from the NCAA ruling yesterday, Gorsuch also rejected the NCAA's argument that the district court's ruling would micromanage the organization's business. The district court, Gorsuch explained, merely barred the NCAA from imposing restraints on benefits relating to education. And it did so, he added, only after concluding that that relaxing those restrictions would not blur the distinction between college and professional sports and thus impair demand for college sports, a guarantee of their argument, or excuse me, a cornerstone of their argument. You know, that's one of the things here is the court. The court doesn't, for example, to me, want to set what the NCAA is going to do.
Right, because
that's the last thing the court wants to do, is basically become the management of what its critics say is a monopoly.
Right.
And if you're looking at something that might be a monopoly, imposing labor compensation restrictions, you can make a case that the NCAA, even if they're nonprofit, is that example.
Right. Are they violating the law? That's the only thing that would be before the court.
This hour's news is brought to you by Travel Centers of America, home of World Lens Coffee, the freshest roast on the road.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome and good morning. Thank you so much for being here. RedEyeRadioShow.com is where we stream live. Get our app, put it on your phone, and listen when you want. You know, the whole NCAA Supreme Court ruling yesterday, another 9-0 ruling. I know it doesn't apply. Most people say, okay, that's just the NCAA, whatever. But it's important when it comes to labor law and monopolies and the ability of an individual, you know, to set their terms with a particular organization. It isn't actually there yet, but it is part of the, because this isn't about direct compensation, but about other educational compensation that the NCAA won't allow, that these athletes believe that individual colleges, if they wish to offer them, should be able to do. And the court said, yeah, they should be able to do that, which seems reasonable at this point in ruling, because it's not upending the entire college system of college athletics. But the question is, will it eventually? And I don't know whether it will or not. You know, you look that Major League Baseball has an antitrust exemption. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball should not have an antitrust exemption. But that comes into the entire decision making of a court looking at something like the NCAA, because Major League Baseball only exists to make money.
Right.
Well, except for the Oakland A's. And so
they're making money just very slowly.
No, I love the movie Moneyball.
Yeah,
I love
great.
That's a great
movie.
I just love that. I love that movie. And they're doing very good. I happened to turn on the TV the other day. I was with my father going through the channels, and it's like, oh. And it was funny because of watching Moneyball, and we only watched 30 seconds of it. And it's like, oh, yeah, you know, and they were playing the Yankees. And so it was televised when I was up there. Watched like 30 seconds of it because baseball, whatever. And I thought, I just went, oh, wonder how they're doing. Because after Moneyball, after watching the movie, I always wonder, oh, how'd Oakland do this year? And they were the other day in first place. So I'm like, oh, okay. Hmm. So it's good. Working.
Yeah.
So the whole Moneyball thing. But, you know, you look at this, and there are, I was talking to a buddy of mine yesterday who's into sports. I said, I could talk about this all day. I probably could, because there's so many different things to look at when it comes to, you know, where the NCAA is going. But when I look at the fact that you have an antitrust exemption for baseball, I just don't think the Supreme Court will eventually overturn the entire college system. I just don't think they will do it. I look at if the college system didn't exist, what would it be? 90% of players would end up not playing college sports. If the NCAA didn't exist, your career would basically end in high school.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The football and basketball, when you look at those sports, for example, I'm going to guess that the golf team in most colleges doesn't bring in revenue. As much as I like golf, I look at it and say, okay, it's really not bringing in any revenue.
It's no badminton.
Exactly, right. It's and so will those other sports even exist if they ever get to the point of saying, okay, we're going to pay compensation. You're only going to pay direct compensation to a few. Now, what may slow this whole thing down is you've got states coming out in Congress, you know, considering the whole, which is dumb that they have to be involved in it to begin with, but you have states, I think there's, how many states are there right now looking at the fact of allowing their college athletes to have endorsement deals?
Right.
Well, the top players in the NBA, excuse me, the top players in, not the NBA, the in college basketball probably could sign multi-million dollar contracts.
For
endorsements alone.
Yeah. Right.
So you're going to have some of these college students, you know, and again, unless they limit the amount that they can do. But then once you open that door, how do you limit it? Once you open that door and say you can take compensation, then the court's going to be micromanaging the NCAA consistently.
Well,
because if you open the door and you say, okay, you can get $50,000 a year in endorsement fees. Well, why can't I make $100,000? Why can you set my cost for outside income?
Right. Why does the organization set the value or a limit to the value?
Right. Of something that doesn't apply to them.
Right.
Because this is a separate business interest. Now, you can make the case in contracts, for example, where you sign a contract and you are committed to that organization. Because it happens professionally, in media it happens. Okay, you've got to work for us, and we have your image. For as long as you have the contract, we've got your image. We basically own your image. For example, I can't take my image, and unless I get permission of the company, which a lot of times they will give you to do it. But I just can't on my own take my image and put it over here and do another radio show over here or another TV show over there. Unless you negotiate that with. They could stop me from doing that in a contract that's done all the time. No, we want to own your image.
Right.
Not that the company has ever insisted that they want to be exclusive to own my image. It's like, no, you can share it. Could you share it with somebody else, please?
Right.
Let somebody else deal with you. Okay, we'll tolerate you, but you're on overnight. You know, if you want to be a higher profile person, they can blame that other media organization out there.
Right.
But that's done all the time. So can you make that same case with the NCAA, but the fact that the compensation that they're offering you in an education, remember, they're not offering you the endorsements, just an education, pales in comparison to what an agent is able to tell a professional team, you know, because you get a great basketball player. You're talking about a great basketball player can come in to a medium-sized college and sell that thing out that was selling 1,000 seats.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not a big college, it's not going to make a difference, but in a smaller college, it could make a huge difference.
Yeah.
Right. A college program, and it could even be a major college program at a major university that's just sucked for the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been, you know, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people to a game in an 18,000-seat arena. They get the hottest college basketball player in the country, and boom. I was watching the whole thing on Pete Maravich.
Mm.
And again, they never did. When he played for LSU, I mean, they never did. They never had incredible. I mean, they weren't the top team in the country, but he was a draw. They sold out.
Mm.
Every game they sold out. Well, any agent could say, what's the cost of a ticket? This is what my player. And he did that alone. He came in and he did that. Everybody wanted to see Pete Maravich. And so and I'm using that just as an example because I happened to see that documentary on him just a couple of weeks ago. And so an agent could come in and say, look, he's responsible for you having a basketball program that was losing money to a basketball program that's now billing $10 million a year. And now with TV money, you get somebody like a Maravich. And for people that don't know, Pete Maravich averaged 44 points a game in his career. Nobody's ever going to touch that. He's the number one scorer in all of college basketball. And they did an analysis. He played before the three-point line. And if the three-point line had existed, they had somebody go through every basket he made.
Wow.
In college.
Wow.
You know what his average for three seasons would have been? 57 points a game. Every single game he would have scored 57 points. Well, that just doesn't exist. Nobody will ever reach his 44 mark. With the three-point line, they'll never reach that for three or four seasons in a row. Now, he only played three seasons because they had freshman teams back then. You didn't play in the varsity in the first year.
Right.
But you look at that, that is some kind of phenomenon that comes in, and it's like, wow, you can sit there and you can and the television money that would come in because somebody's in a major program is selling that kind, you know, making that kind of an impact. TV ratings go through the roof.
Right.
You're talking about if Maravich existed today and could perform in the same, any player could come in and average 44 points a game, even with the 3-point line, would bring a college of prominence that you just, it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars.
In today's college system, his nickname would not be allowed. You couldn't call him Pistol Pete. That would not be allowed.
All right, I forgot. Forget about everything that I said.
Uh-huh.
Pistol Pete would have been canceled.
Yes. Can't have Pistol. Call him what you want, but you can't call him Pistol Pete.
Keen observation, Eric. Mm-hmm. Key observation.
Yeah.
But he was such a phenom that you just go, wow, he would just. And so that's what you're looking at as to players today when they come, you know, when they come in. There's so many things to look at. I just don't see them dismantling the entire system, even though you can make a case that who is anybody to get in the way of me negotiating a contract with an employer, whether they're profit or nonprofit.
And if you look at it, too, the students that would be getting the endorsement deals, getting the higher compensation, what would be the concern, right, that they're becoming the stars of the team?
Yes.
It's, you know, that's the locker room part. You've got to gel in the locker room. If there's one that stands out. But here's my question. Is that not already happening? I mean, if a player is standing, Maravich today would stand out dramatically over the other players.
Yes.
And I don't know that there's any difference. I mean, obviously there would be a difference because there'd be a Lamborghini in the parking lot waiting for that player instead of, you know, walking back to the dorm. I don't know. But the whole idea.
Who else would you want to interview?
Right, exactly.
And we know
But it is based on the performance. Because if that student were getting, a million dollar per season Nike deal, and they were getting higher compensation from the school, but they weren't performing, you've got some very different locker room issues. You know, if they're either performing or they're not, and if they're performing and they're excelling, and that's the way it happens, by the way. Not every player on the team is equally talented. Not every player on the team equally performs. And so I don't think the spotlight would be, it would be different, but it wouldn't be different to the point of changing the entire dynamics in the locker room and having too much attention on one student. That really is based on performance, in my opinion, or starts and ends with performance, and you already have that in play.
Well, let me ask you this question, too. If the free market ever came into the NCAA and everything was more merit-based, does that fit the culture of the modern liberal university today,
Well, I know that's a great question.
I know it's not a legal question.
No, but we've covered mostly legal questions here. It's a great question because either that, you know, either the value is there or it's not, and what happens on the other side when you're actually talking about the campus and the school itself outside the sports program? Well, it doesn't, it's, you know, again, it's not, at many schools, it's really not merit-based.
But this is the one thing here that they write in SCOTUS blog. But in the end, Gorsuch emphasized the Supreme Court agreed with the Ninth Circuit Court that although the national debate on amateurism in college sports is important, it is not the Supreme Court's job to resolve
it. And that's what I was alluding to earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not. Look, they're not going to set up and how the NCAA in the future would look like. It would basically be a question. The question before the court really is: are there rights being violated because the law is being broken? Is the NCAA acting outside the law? And that would be, you know, ultimately the question. And that's it. And as they mentioned in the opinions, NCAA is not above the law. But what happens from here with other cases will be very, very interesting to watch.
866-90 Red Eye.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on warehouse safety. Warehouse tools. Forklifts, pallet jacks, and dollies are common tools used to assist in the loading and unloading of vehicles. But before you think about hopping on a forklift to help speed up the process, ask yourself if you have the proper training. OSHA requires mandated training programs for the use of forklifts and powered pallet jacks. If you haven't received the training, stick to two-wheel dollies and hand pallet jacks when assisting with cargo. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This report is brought to you by National Truck Protection and Premium 2000 Plus, the number one selling aftermarket truck warranties in North America, available at thousands of used truck dealers everywhere.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hardy, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Yeah, I just want you to know that some of my opinions and observations on the Supreme Court ruling yesterday concerning the NCAA and, allowing member schools to increase what's called educational compensation is got nothing to do with the fact that I never won an athletic scholarship to school.
Yeah, right. There's no bitterness there. None whatsoever.
Well, I told my story. I mean, I was small, but when I was playing intramurals in my first month, September of the first year of college at a community college, the assistant coach was out there and said, "You need to try out for the team."
Yeah.
He said, "You got a good shot." I went, I remember... I'm so glad I had that attitude at such a young age because I would have been I might not even been 18 yet. I still might have been 17.
Mm.
And I looked and I said, I have no career in basketball.
Right.
I said, and I've got to work to go to school. I said, thanks, but no thanks. I'll never forget because a year before when I was playing basketball, I was like, oh, maybe I can get into college and a scholarship. And then I got a job and then I got to the bank and it was like, I have no basketball career.
Yeah.
I'd be sitting on the bench even there because I was pretty small. I'd be sitting on the bench there. They'd go and shoot a couple of long shots, will you? And there was no three-point line back then, remember?
Right. Well.
Which, as you remember, I caught that mistake in Forrest Gump. Remember when Forrest Gump got out of the Army?
Oh,
and he,
yeah.
And he, remember he was told and he was
right.
playing ping pong in the gym?
Mm-hmm.
One of the officers comes in and says, you know, your service is done. You can go home. And he runs across. They have a 3-point line on that basketball court. It did not exist.
Didn't exist
in
then.
The early 70s.
Yeah.
That's how passionate I am about the game. But I knew I had. It's like I laughed. It's like, no, I felt good, but it was like, no, I
had a job working at a grocery store in high school. I remember the owner of the grocery store coming up to me and saying, you know, you got potential. You could work here professionally. I said, I already do. You do pay me, not much, but you do pay me. Well, keep up the good work. Okay. All right.
Those were good days.
Yeah.
Those were good. I like these days better, but those were still good days.
Oh, I like these days better, too.
Yeah, I like the present.
I have a little more money. Yeah. And a greater perspective on life, I think.
I wasn't even thinking that. That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
A little bit more common sense.
Yeah. Yeah. A greater perspective on life.
Somebody is going to be offended all night. Red Eye Radio.
And he is our Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90. Red Eye, I've just tuned in. We've been talking about the Supreme Court 9-0 decision on the NCAA and compensation for athletes, where member schools will be allowed to add more educational benefits that were banned by the NCAA. This does not has nothing to do with yet monetary compensation to players, and working through Congress and also many states adopting laws saying college players can take endorsement money, even though that is a separate issue. And you know, where will it all end? Interesting that the Supreme Court said amateurism in college sports is important, but it's not the be-all, end-all, because they still must abide by the law. What that means, I'm not sure. We speculated on what it might mean.
Yeah.
Let's head to some of your calls and comments. We go to John in Missouri. John, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi. Hey, thanks, guys.
You're welcome.
Appreciate what you do.
Thanks.
I like it. Facts with common sense. That's what I appreciate about you guys.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I think the one of the big stories is we have a 9-0 decision in the Supreme Court, and look how many we've had here lately. That's unheard of. And I think what they're doing is they're telling Congress that, hey, we've got this. We don't need any more in this club, and don't be packing it.
Well, it could be that they're sending a message. I don't know, but we did some research here recently on the number of 9-0 decisions, and typically it is roughly a third. In one session, it was 36%. I don't know where they are so far for this year. They've had several this year so far, but given the fact that we don't go over every single case, not every single case makes the news like the NCAA case or other cases. So I don't know where it will fall out, but typically it's fallen somewhere around a third, maybe a little over a third of the cases since the year 2000. I think a lot of people would be surprised. I don't know if we were surprised, but certainly we learned something in going back over that. And that is that with there are decisions, of course, bigger decisions, you know, if they went back to Roe v. Wade or did something, you're certainly not going to see a 9-0 decision there.
Well, there were a couple of decisions made on the patent judges yesterday, and that was 5-4 and 7-2.
Right.
So just so you know, those and on the patent judges, you know, and that's, you know, do they have too much authority? Basically, was what that was was based on. Here's what I think, John. The big story would have, because I don't know, I can say that I've paid attention to what the Supreme Court does, and I'm fascinated. We both are, and I think a lot of people are, by, you know, how they come to their decisions. What are the precedents that they use? What is the logic? What is the, you know, how do they interpret the Constitution? I will say this, so I really don't know. I've seen people like Jonathan Turley, who I respect as a constitutional law professor. I've seen Dershowitz. I've seen others out there that I respect that say, hey, they may be sending a message. I guess I come to the point of saying, well, who are these judges? Please name me these judges that are saying to themselves, I really believe this, but I'm going to vote opposite of what I believe.
Just to
send a message. Right. That would be the question that I would have. That'd be the question that I would ask these constitutional law professors that are making these statements. They're the ones that are doing it. And thank you so much. And thanks for the nice words, John. That would be the question that I would have.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the judges that are doing it?
Right.
Because if it's the liberal justices, okay, that's fine. If it's the constructionist judges that I support that are taking the opposite point of view just to show everybody that we're united, then I'm not going to be happy.
Yeah, I think it more likely comes down to the fact that you have some cases that are pretty obvious. And I think you get to the Catholic Foster Agency case last week, also 9-0. And it was to say that, look, you don't have to go through this agency if you want to foster or foster to adopt. There are other agencies out there.
Right.
You don't have to do that. They're allowed to do their own agency and have their own standards as an agency that is based in the Catholic Church. That's okay for them to do that. And
now that surprised me, but if there was a compromise, I would suspect the compromise came from the liberal justices on that one.
Could be. If there were a compromise, I would suspect the same thing. Yeah, the fact that we didn't see two liberal justices peel off on that, because of the activism on the left, which includes on the high court, that was, I don't know if it was surprising because of the nature of the case. When you make the point that there's no inherent right to go through that, to use that particular agency, you can go through multiple agencies, make it available, and you don't have to choose that one. They don't have to abide by your standards, and you don't have to abide by theirs. You can still participate in the system, and it's not keeping you from doing so. And that would be, I think, the difference there. So I think that was more of a clear-cut case, and I think these 9-0 decisions.
I might disagree on that because I believe that you have bizarre decisions that have come from liberal justices where the clear cut that we see is not what they see at all. And so I'm still surprised that was a 9-0 decision. I really am.
I think I would have been in a different case. I think if it were a bigger case, while that case made some news, it wasn't the biggest case that was out there involving what they would tell you was LGBTQ rights, which there's no inherent right to use a particular foster agency for anybody, regardless of what group you belong to.
Oh, the logic that you and I agree with, my disagreement would be on my speculation as to why the liberal justice did what they did, would probably get us going in a big circle and really take us nowhere.
Well, I think my point is that it's not a landmark case for LGBTQ. It wasn't ever a landmark case for LGBTQ rights because it didn't have the effect of shutting out gay couples who wanted to adopt or gay individuals who wanted to foster or adopt.
I would say that what surprised me is you have seen the response of the left to the Catholic bishops,
mm-hmm.
how they went insane.
Yeah. Right.
The left went insane as to something that nobody should go insane with. I can't tell you how many times I saw on social media from conservatives yesterday stating on the whole Catholic, you know, bishops saying, okay, we're going to be looking at the fact that, you know, hey, if you're in favor of abortion, you know, you will be questioned for that. And it sent the left into a tizzy. I mean, the left mentality is that religion should cater to what I believe, and if I believe something different, they should be forced to do what I say. So, again, I don't want to make the case that liberal politicians are liberal justices, because when it comes to the whole transgender movement that exists in this country, that the liberal transgender activist movement, you have Democratic politicians saying one thing. One of the people that was absolutely against biological males playing women's sports was Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we've asked this question, and this is a, this I believe right now is a legit question. Has the Democratic Party gone so bat soup? I don't still like the S at the beginning of that word. Mm-hmm. I just keep thinking I'm going to slip one of these days.
Mm-hmm.
That they're so bat soup crazy that they've even lost the liberal justices.
I think there's something to that. I think that it's quite possible that on many of these issues, they look at that going, well, that the far left has gone too far. You know, it's, and they may look at it as, you know, again, liberal justices. Well, we don't mind legislating from the bench, but we're not going to go in and, I don't know, change science.
Right.
We're not going to go in and, because we can't do that. I mean, there are things we might be able to get away with in terms of legislating from the bench, but there's only so far we can go. At least for now, there's only so far we can go.
Here's the point. I mean, Ginsburg, and I don't know, Sotomayor, or I got mine blank.
Kagan.
Kagan.
Mm-hmm. Elena Kagan.
I don't know. Are they the new feminists where men tell them what to do? Or are they still part of the old feminism, which is we women should be able to have our own rights and should be able to have opportunity? Because that seems to be where Ginsburg came on liberal transgender activist movement out there.
Right.
In some of the statements that she actually made on it.
Right.
Where she was very wary of it. So it all gets to the point of, are you willing to, as Gloria Steinem did, wave the surrender flag and say the new feminism is men dictating to us what to do and what our opportunities should be?
Yeah. I mean, you know, quite possibly. You know, because something we brought up recently, we brought it up before, but we brought it up again in a discussion about men playing on women's teams is, well, they can play. There is a team for them to play on.
Right. They have a choice.
So what is the, so why is it that they don't want to play on the men's teams? Well, they'll tell you, well, they feel uncomfortable playing on a men's team. Well, how does that not apply for the girls that are on the girls' team when they come to play and they dominate on that team? Or in individual sports where they're excelling and the opportunities for women in those categories all of a sudden are gone because men are dominating. So, again, those are the questions that would come up in up in a courtroom that you have to look at both sides. And I am curious to see what they would say. And, you know, a lot of the stuff during the hearings is very fascinating. When they hear the case and the back and forth, the arguments are made. But it'll be fascinating to watch where they go on items like that, which I suspect are going to be in the next couple of years, if not sooner.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. If you would like to get in, let's head back to you as we talk about the Supreme Court ruling and the NCAA. Let's go to Kurt in Oklahoma City. Kurt, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Hi, Kurt.
Good morning, guys. Hey. Appreciate the show. Enjoy it every morning.
Thank you.
Hey, my thought is if they're going to start handing out, you know, educational compensation, whatever that is, I don't know, money for supplies and computers and food and whatnot, then if college is so expensive now, how bad is it going to get after they start doing that? Because somebody's got to pay for it.
That's why you can expect other sports to end.
Yeah, definitely.
Other sports are going to end because we're at the point right now, I believe that our society is looking at college and saying, is there the return on the investment that we want for a six-figure debt for an education? And I think a significant portion of people are saying, no, it is not. So I can't see, in order to support sports, that there will be a huge increase in college costs. We're going to enter a very interesting next 10 years, I think, here in the United States when it comes to education. And what there were, not only that, but different curriculum. Thank you so much. We just, some excess noise there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're entering a very interesting part here the next decade in the United States, where education is going to go.
Right.
Are people going to focus more in on the technical, because that's where the money is. Now, before COVID, I don't know what it is right now, but before COVID, because we always bring it up, the top, I think, 10 jobs that paid the most with a four-year degree, I think every single one in the top 10 was engineering. Every single one.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a society that we're not really creating a ton of engineers. And if we don't, not only those jobs, but those industries will move to other places in the world that are doing that.
Well, or we'll be importing the talent here. The companies,
one or the other, yes,
yeah, yep. which is happening for a number of industries right now. Where if you don't have people for those roles, then you go and you recruit all around the world,
right,
to bring them here. So
again, college cost. It's going to be fascinating to see where they go.
Yeah,
and the bloated administrations of these colleges.
Yeah, right.
What's going to happen to them?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here this morning. All right, in sports. Good afternoon, sports fans. Biff Barr from the Biff Barr Sports Spot Spotlight, biffing up all the details and barfing them right back at you. Got a partial score here, Philadelphia 6. There you go. The old George Carlin routine.
Yeah.
So, yes, I paid attention to a couple of things that he said.
Just a few.
There's this Los Angeles Raiders defensive end, Carl Nassib, become the first active player in league history to come out that he is gay. As we started off the show, don't care.
Right.
Don't care.
Doesn't affect me one way or the other. And the fact that, you know, we've been hearing the discussion from people associated with the NFL for years saying there are many gay players, they just have not come out. All right.
Yeah.
I don't, it's about football.
Like every player, I wish him the most success. You know, we look back, you and I talking about looking back at Michael Sam. And I, you know, we both remember when the draft came up, the media went absolutely crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Does anybody remember why Michael Sam got out of the business completely? Because of the mental strain that was put on him to perform and as a champion of gay rights instead of just letting the young man play football.
Right. I mean, the media waited and waited and waited and waited.
Yep.
Seventh round pick.
Oh, you mean the draft?
And the draft.
I never forget the draft.
That's where it all started, really, for most people. They had never really heard of him until the draft. And they just camped out because the media needed this to be about him being gay.
Yep.
Well, at that point, you know, we talk about distractions in the locker room. Well, at that point, the media just became obsessed with all of that over and over and over and over again, to the point of how could it not be a distraction? Because the media was going to ask all these questions and create a moment that really didn't apply. It's about whether or not you can play and perform on the field.
Instead of saying, go play football and ask football questions, everything, he became the hero to the left. He received hero superstar status without ever performing on the field because of his sexuality. He was bothered by that. That wore on him. The liberals did no favor to Michael Sam at all. None.
Right.
Once he was done in the NFL, they forgot about him. And you know how I know? Because I was probably one of the few people in the United States to actually watch the only time he played in a real professional football game. Because I talked about it the next Monday when I came in. And by that time, he had already left that league because he played in the CFL for just one game. And I watched him. They didn't put him in the game, and when they finally did, I just shook my head and said, he doesn't have it.
Right.
And a day later, he said, I'm done. And then he retired from professional football with really, you know, never having any type of career at all.
Right.
But a ton of mental anguish, as he stated, was his reason not to try, you know, to continue to try to be in professional football. The mental pressure that the left threw at him by anointing him instead of just letting the young man play football. And that's why we've said across the board, don't care.
Well, we talk about identity politics. Let's talk about identity sports.
Yep.
Because really, the fans don't care. The fans want their team to win. Can that person make a contribution to the team to bring them to that level? That's the only question. If you don't, you know, if you're not performing on the field, whether it's football, baseball, whatever else, that, you know, you're not going to be a fan favorite. And it doesn't matter what happens outside the locker room or behind closed doors in your home. Doesn't matter how you identify off the field. Because if you're setting records for the team, if you're performing on that field, that's the only thing the fans care about. But not the left. They need it to be identity sports. That's what it needs to be. We are going to put all of these players into a category. You must be in a category. Well, no, you don't have to be in a category. The only category that matters is the team. But they don't see it that way because their agenda doesn't let them go there. For them, they're obsessed. And it's unfortunate. Highly unfortunate. And I suspect, by the way, it's why you don't have other gay players in the NFL, if it is accurate and true that there are other players that are gay. It's probably why you don't have them come out. Because they understand, well, every interview, everything is going to be about, from that point on, their identity off the field. Most players don't want that. Because in today's world, 2021, I mean, it's you know, coming out, it's not like it was decades ago. You come out and, all right, you see that all the time. People of note coming out. All right, fine. So what would be the reason? Well, in professional sports, it's going to be, well, we need to make it about identity. And when you're part of a team, it's not like Elton John. He's an artist. You know, his music is his. He's not, and while he has a great band, he's not part of a professional sports team. It's not about a group that has to gel to make something happen on a field. And when it comes to sports, you know, this is where the left wants to make sure that agenda is everywhere, in every aspect of everybody's life,
yeah,
and make a note.
The individual of Michael Sam didn't matter to them.
Didn't
matter to the left at all.
Right.
It was, can we use you and then throw you away?
Right.
And then it was time to throw Michael Sam away. They threw him away.
Right.
And I know, because I remember, mm-hmm. nobody was paying attention to when he went to the CFL. Nobody cared in the United States. The left completely dropped him. It was, because I remember I came in that next day and said, did anybody hear anything about Michael Sam playing in his first real professional football game? There was nothing in the United States.
Right.
Nothing.
Right.
Nothing. They didn't care.
Right.
We used him, threw him out. You're done. Mm-hmm. Next.
Right.
We didn't care about you. We cared about using your identity.
You didn't
to further push our narrative.
Our agenda and our narrative is the only thing that mattered, and we were going mm-hmm. to use you.
Yep.
And I suspect that's what, if there are other gay players in the NFL, I suspect that's why they don't come out, because they look at it and say, I want my performance on the field to matter. That's what I'm here for. Nassib chose to come out. Okay. It wasn't like the world was waiting for that to happen. Because, I we go back to the 2014 draft with Michael Sam and seventh round, and the media was just waiting. Okay, well, when's he going to be picked? When's he going to be picked? Liberal media could not wait for him to be picked because they needed to use him for the agenda.
And every single team that didn't pick him was
Well,
is this because they're homophobic? Instead of just letting it happen.
Right.
And what it came down to is, and I don't know, I mean, as I've said before, with professional athletes, many thought he was too slow. I wasn't impressed with the short time that I saw him play with, you know, just a couple of, you know, I think he even played four or five plays with Montreal, the CFL.
Mm-hmm.
But the NFL is a whole different ball game, and most seven-round draft choices don't make it. So it was always an uphill battle for him to do it. But, again, it was an opportunity for the left to claim that the NFL was homophobic, which is why he didn't make it.
Right.
And that isn't the case with Michael Sam.
Right.
And I don't know how much of it had to do with the mental strain that he was under because of the expectations, really what I believe was the false expectations put on by the liberal media by anointing him, as their identity politics superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't come through. So it's like, okay, next. Who's the next one we can churn through the liberal narrative machine and then discard?
Right. We need someone to work for our agenda. Yeah.
So there you go. And like we said, I saw it yesterday, went, don't care. Wanted to mention it here on the show, but don't really care to make a point about. I don't know what the liberal media will do in this particular case. He's played in the NFL for quite a few years, so it may just be okay.
Which was my point earlier. You know, the world wasn't waiting for this to happen they were waiting on that draft that ended up being a seventh round draft in 2014 with Michael Sam. You know, Nassib is already an established player. Don't know where it's going to go. And again, his choice. But I suspect other players who are gay in the NFL, again, don't know to what extent that exists, but if it does exist, say to themselves, you know, right now is not the time because I don't want the media trying to make me their champion. I'm trying to keep my football career intact, and everything is going to be about agenda.
First question he's going to be asked over and over again come training camp is, what does he think about transgender women playing against biological women.
Right.
You know that's going to be one of the first questions.
That's got to be a question.
That's got to be the first question.
And he's going to have to pick a side.
Yeah. Because now it's not about his football anymore.
It's about agenda.
It's for a significant number of sports people out there. It's going to be, well, why aren't you rallying? Why aren't you, you know?
You've got to be the spokesperson.
You've got to act this way now. Now that you've come out,
yep.
You need to have your specific liberal positions.
Right.
And if you don't.
And he may be okay with doing that, but that is required one way or the other, whether you like it or not.
866-90-RED-EYE.
This is the Marketplace Minute. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer. Stocks closed higher today. The Dow rose 1.75%. The S&P was almost 1.5% higher. And the NASDAQ was up 0.8%. We heard from several Federal Reserve officials today on when the Fed might start dialing back the extra help it's given the economy during the pandemic. The head of the New York Fed is in no rush. He wants to see more economic data. Last week, the Fed signaled two interest rate hikes in 2023. COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. have dipped below 300 a day for the first time since March of last year. Meanwhile, as of today, 150 million Americans are fully vaccinated. And Moderna is adding two new production lines at a plant just outside Boston, making its COVID-19 vaccine. Moderna says both new lines will be up and running by early next year and will help increase production of its vaccine by 50%. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer with the Marketplace Minute.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Hurley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye, if you would like to get in. Meanwhile, in other sports news, a transgender BMX freestyle rider and U.S. Olympic team alternate once allegedly made remarks about exploding the head of a president with dynamite. Mm. In a Facebook comments reported by conservative journalist Ian Chong, Chelsea Wolf, who will be part of the Team USA in the Summer Olympics as an alternate, allegedly wrote, quote, "I would never say that someone should explode the head of a president. That would be illegal," in a follow-up response, added, "but I will say with dynamite." That's because just a sentence fragment, and that doesn't actually mean anything. It's not necessarily related to the sentence that came before it. Breitbart News had previously reported on comments made by Wolf in which he said his goal was to go to the Olympics and win so he could burn the American flag on the podium. "My goal is to win the Olympics so I can burn a U.S. flag on the podium," Wolf wrote on Facebook in March of 2020, along with a story detailing Trump's position on trans women competing against biological females. "This is what they focus on during the pandemic, hurting trans children." However, Wolf told Fox News that the since-deleted post should not be construed as hatred towards America.
No, you burn the flag out of love for your country.
Well, again, hurting trans children, nobody talks about hurting biological women, do they? Let's have that discussion.
Oh, sure.
Taking opportunity.
Right.
Your opportunities exist.
Right.
See, this
absolutely.
This is your thing that you're being hurt. You're not being hurt. Your opportunity is there.
Yep.
You choose to be hurt. That's on you. Your opportunity. You're not being denied the opportunity. By your position, women are denied. Biological women are denied opportunity.
You believe you have a right of your preference on where to compete.
Yes.
And you don't.
By the way, keep that insane rage.
Mm-hmm.
Be honest with it. Promote it.
Don't
hide from it.
Own it.
Don't delete your posts.
No.
We are not about the cancel culture here. We want to know specifically how those on the left think. We have said this, if you've listened to our show for any length of time, we do not want to cancel anybody on the left. what we have always wanted from the left is for them not to lie to you and pretend that they're moderates. Oh, like we see going on right now. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Mm-hmm. Oh, voter ID is fine. I don't know anybody who's ever been against voter ID in the Democratic Party. It just doesn't. No, it's fine and dandy. Last week it was racist. What are you talking about? Why do you guys make those things up?
I don't even know anybody who was against it.
Right. This is one of the Republican lies out there.
Just a myth.
One of the Republicans, just a myth.
And by the way, don't look it up on YouTube, please. Those are doctored videos of us saying that it was racist. Right.
And if you look at your computer, you're a racist.
How dare you challenge me? Here's your forecast.
The Gulf Coast, Deep South, Carolinas, and on up through the I-95 corridor into the Northeast. We'll see a good amount of rain today. Rainfall amounts from a trace for most of eastern Texas into southern Oklahoma to heavy downpours today for Gulf Coast states from Florida back over to Texas. Now, that rain will continue through Georgia and heavy at times through the Carolinas on up the I-95 corridor. We won't see much in the way of rainfall back towards Indiana. But then from Ohio, New York, and on into Maine, a good amount of clouds and rainfall will persist throughout the day. So if it's not raining yet in those areas we mentioned where you are, look for the chance of rain through today. There's a fair bet we could see some severe weather associated with this front. Damaging gusts, sporadic severe hail, and perhaps a tornado remain possible. For the first Tuesday of summer, your national forecast from Red Eye Radio, I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Your forecast is brought to you by Low Viscosity Kendall Super DFE. With increased protection and fuel savings, low viscosity leads to victory. Kendall Motor Oil, you get out what you put in.
Stand by. There's going to be a lot of screaming. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. One more note. Reactions are piling up after it was reported that the International Olympic Committee has approved Laurel Hubbard, a male who identifies as a female, to become the first trans athlete to compete in the Olympics, a weightlifter. Hubbard has been competing in New Zealand and would have been on the last Olympics team if it wasn't for an injury that prevented it. Hubbard's inclusion at the Tokyo Games has engendered, engendered much criticism. Belgian Olympian Anna Van Bellingen, for instance, said, "Is it a bad joke that Hubbard will advance in the Olympics as a female contestant? I understand that for sports authorities, nothing is simple as following your common sense and that there are a lot of impracticalities when studying such a rare phenomenon. But for athletes, the whole thing feels like a bad joke," according to Inside the Games. The group Save Women's Sports Australia also spoke out about the IOC's flawed policy that would allow Hubbard to compete as a female. Quote, "It is a flawed policy from the IOC that has allowed the selection of a 43-year-old biological male who identifies as a woman to compete in the female category," the woman declared after the announcement. Sharon Davis, a female British Olympian who has been outspoken on the issue of trans athletes, voiced her dissent in response to the IOC's decision. "Among others, we have men and women's separate competition for a big reason. Biology in sports matters. Separate categories gives females equal opportunities of sporting success. The average age of a female Olympic weightlifter is 23. Laurel Hubbard is 43. Sex is not gender.
You know,
It is now. They changed that in the last. We don't know. We didn't get the notice that they had changed it, but they changed it in the last couple of years.
Yeah, and it's being pushed more and more. The question is, and look, we point to things like events like Governor DeSantis in Florida protecting the women in his state. But globally, I don't think you're going to see that resistance. I don't think you're going to see that pushback to the extent of keeping transgender men who are living as females from competing with women. I really do wonder how far it goes. Because, again, the agenda globally is being embraced more than not. Here domestically, especially when it comes to schools because of Title IX, it is being rejected more and more. Not completely, but more and more it is. But at some point, there has to be that global uprising to say, if you want to compete, you can compete. You want to live your life the way you live your life, that's fine. But you'll compete in the biological category of which you were born. And that's it. And if you don't like that, you don't have to compete. Because, again, this comes down to what? My preference on which category to compete in supersedes your rights in the case of Title IX.
Reading here from Daily Mail UK, the IOC policy specifies conditions under which those who transition from male to female are eligible to compete in the female category. Among them is the athlete has declared that her gender identity is female and that declaration cannot be changed for sporting purposes. The minimum is 4 years. The committee also announced any transgender athlete could compete as a woman, provided their testosterone levels were below 10 nanomoles per liter for at least 12 months before their first competition. Hubbard met those standards, but you have those in the weightlifting community argue that the policy does not guarantee fair competition. The determining criteria, a maximum reading of 10 nanomoles per liter of testosterone, is at least 5 times more than a biological woman. You have scientists who have said that the guidelines do little to mitigate the biological advantage of those who have gone through puberty as males, including bone and muscle density. Hubbard's facing criticism from international athletes and health professionals who claim the weightlifter will have an unfair advantage over the competition. British Olympic swimmer Sharon Davis is among those who have hit out at the decision to compete in the women's category. We let you know what that is. You know, we did that earlier where she said men and women have separate competition for a big reason. Biology and sports matters. And so what I'm looking for is what Hubbard has actually lifted as compared to the top women. I haven't found that yet. I saw one that said 617 pounds that Hubbard had lifted, but I don't know. They don't have that here. I expect that there will be an article on that coming out in the next week.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was, analyze and say, look, this is, this is why this is unfair.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I mean, look, it comes down to that athlete's preference over everyone else's right to compete in their own category. I really wonder, because globally, the resistance is a bit slower, I think. It's there, but it's not there officially just yet. I mean, we see it here domestically because of, again, governors like DeSantis and others who are saying and standing up for women's sports and saying, we'll protect women And we believe this is a violation of Title IX, and we're not going to accept this.
It is, I will say one thing that is fascinating, and we have discussed this before, is how quickly feminists crumbled. And when you actually break it down, you know, to the minutiae of the issue, women crumbled because the man says so. And we've had a lot of fun with that, but there's a seriousness to that, that the liberal feminist were always, nope. We're going to be strong. We're going to defend women. And in this case, it's simply if the man says that he is a woman, he's a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the doesn't matter whether science disagrees with it.
Right.
Everything is thrown out the window. And when Gloria Steinem came out and now backed the liberal transgender activist movement, that was really the final flag of surrender by feminists, by liberal feminists, that we will allow men to tell us what to do.
Right.
That really is amazing.
Yeah.
Really is amazing.
Right.
As I said, we have compassion for everyone to go through that type of process in your head, to not believe that you are the correct sex, because that's what it is now. It's not gender any longer. Mm-hmm. Remember, they changed the rules of it.
Mm-hmm.
The rules got, we weren't informed of the rule change.
And we don't write the rules.
And we don't write the
rules. We also don't change the rules.
And so as we, you know, when you look at this, it's like, fine, but you have a place to compete. You take a woman's place, that woman's place no longer, a biological woman's place, there is no place. By the way, we say biological women because to separate it from trans women, but there really only is women. Biological is a given.
Mm-hmm.
But it must be, you know, as we know, when we have talked to transgenders on the show, it's a tremendous taxing thing on their minds.
Mm-hmm.
To believe that they are one thing. We in no way can get into somebody's head and say it isn't real for them. I don't know that. Nobody right. knows that. Only the individual knows that.
Mm-hmm.
And what precisely causes that, I can't tell you either. That will take scientists greater than me. All I know is you're not. You have not changed sex.
No.
You cannot change sex.
No.
That is a fantasy. And because you can't change, biology does not make anybody who believes that a bigot or transphobic. It merely is a declaration or a statement of science. That's it. And so, in our society, we have stated, because of the obvious physical advantages of a biological male, well documented over the ages, that sports at the highest level are played separately.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, again, we created Title IX for a reason. But the left doesn't believe, the far left doesn't believe that it should exist.
Separately, except for the fact that if a woman is able to play a man's sport, they are able to.
Well, because we didn't create protection, any kind of protection or rights,
right.
special
it,
rights for men's
so,
sports.
So it's a society that has said, okay, biological women for the most part, but if, well, then the opening is there for you.
Mm-hmm.
Professional golf. The LPGA is called the LPGA because it's for the ladies.
Right.
I wonder if they're going to have to change that name. It's not ladies, it's women. But it's, but that is for and has been for biological women. The PGA is called the Professional Golf Association.
BPGA, birthing person Golf Association.
Oh, birthing person. Okay, thank you very much. The BP.
BPGA.
Thank you.
No, I mean, again, that's basically where it falls out. But right. Except if that male, if that biological male chooses to compete in women's sports, everybody else must take a back seat.
Right.
Over because of his preference. No.
Yeah, if you and, you know, the PGA is called the professional because if you're a woman and you're good enough, well, you can play.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you see the longest hitters on the PGA Tour right now.
Right.
My God. Most of them. You see their upper body.
Mm-hmm.
And they're hitting the ball farther than ever before. It'd be very tough. You'd have to be a very exceptional woman that so far does not exist who could compete with the length. It doesn't mean that they can't be a better putter. It doesn't mean they can't be a better chipper. But if you're playing that same distance, the man has a huge advantage because of their body strength in golf. But if you can play in the PGA Tour.
Right. You got to qualify.
Yeah. You got to qualify, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's simply a thing of score.
Right.
And you have to tee off where the men tee off.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE, if you would like to get in on the show. Coming up following the top of the hour, Portland Police Association leader says the morale among officers is as bad as it's ever been. I mean, that's nothing new. The NAACP and Congressional Black Caucus are silent about the Democratic senator's membership at an all-white club. The Iran talks, where are they going? And a whole bunch more. New poll out there shows strong support for voter ID and easier early voting. And
like 80%.
Yeah.
The other 20% currently can't find their driver's license. Yeah. It's, and I think the left sees this. They know this. We know, you know, what's been going on in recent days. They magically all of a sudden want you to believe we were never against voter ID. The fact of the matter is they've been battling against it from the beginning. But yeah, it's a very basic concept. Should you have to prove who you are when you vote? Yeah.
Yeah.
Not unreasonable for them to ask you for ID.
Nope.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.